This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about human rights laws. I am joined by barrister and chair of the Valuation Tribunal, Matthew Wyard, from Three Paper Buildings Chambers in London. Matthew is a public law and human rights specialist barrister with a particular focus on the education, health and social care sectors. He brings significant experience of court-based and advisory work for claimants. He is a member of the Attorney General's Junior Panel and the Welsh Government Public Law Scheme. Matthew has also been instructed by the Secretary of State for Justice in a recent disability discrimination claim and to carry out work on behalf of the Home Office. Alongside having a busy barrister's practice, Matthew is also a widely published legal author. Thank you ever so much for joining me, Matthew.
Pleasure, Hattie. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm very well. And here we go again on our Zoom podcast recording.
Yes.
So, human rights laws, part one. This is a huge, huge, huge topic, I think, that most people, Matthew, if I may say so, can relate more to, perhaps, than other areas of law that generally, you know, affect our everyday lives. So I'm really pleased to be doing this podcast with you. Thank you so much for that. Let's talk about this. So let's just start right from the top. This is our part one. We want to explain to our listeners, what do we mean by human rights laws? And where does the concept of human rights actually come from?
It's an interesting question. I suppose it's interesting because everyone probably has their own view on what human rights law entails and what human rights actually are. I think the best definition of it is actually that is provided by the Equality and Human Rights Commission, and they define it as the basic rights and freedoms that everyone has throughout the course of their lives.
I think that
sums it up pretty perfectly, really. In terms of where they come from, I'm not a legal historian myself, but it really is all about the Second World War. Pre Second World War, everyone
pre 1939 we're talking about then, yes.
Yes. And around that period really. So before then we had the Magna Carta from 1215, obviously.
That was a long time ago.
It's amazing they were thinking about human rights back then.
Yes.
And that was all about land, really. But the right to due process that I guess we may come on to later was actually first encapsulated then. And it was developed throughout the 20th centuries and earlier. So we had the Petition of Rights in 1628, the Bill of Rights after that, leading up to the Habeas Corpus Act and the Parliament Acts of the early 1900s. But the real focus on human rights as we know it now came about when the UN was formed just after the Second World War, so in 1945.
Yes.
And then some of your listeners will probably have heard of the UN Declaration of Human Rights and the UN Charter. And that was really the first time globally that the world had come to realise, I suppose, the importance of human rights and try to put them on a global level playing field. And after the UN Declaration on Human Rights, particularly in relation to Europe in 1950, we then saw the coming into force of what we're probably all familiar with, the European Convention on Human Rights, which was then brought into force in the UK with the Human Rights Act in 1998.
When we say 1998, that doesn't for me, born in the 70s, that doesn't for me seem that long ago. And therefore you think, really? We were still developing this in 98 when it should have been, you know, done by then? I mean, I don't know. That's not my perception.
It doesn't seem a long while. It seems a long while to me.
I get it.
No, I think probably the UN Declaration was probably the main one, because that apart from two states, everyone in the world signed up to the UN Charter and the UN Declaration. Besides,
you know, the UK went in. Well, okay, I get it. I'm not going to go down that road. Otherwise, we're going down another road. Right. So this is basically what we're saying: is human rights laws have been around as so far as back as the 1200s.
Yeah.
With the Magna Carta. And then it's developed over the centuries and decades. So let's talk about the key rights of human rights laws as we know them today. What are the key, most commonly used, referred to, understood and known human rights laws?
Sure. Technically there are 16. Obviously, I won't go through them all, but the main ones are probably the right to life, which then goes hand in hand with the abolition of the death penalty. Rights
in the UK, obviously, or the US, it still has the death penalty in some states, as we know.
Yeah, although the abolition of the death penalty was one that is brought in over the entirety of Europe by the convention. It's not in the UN Declaration, but we also have the freedom from torture and slavery, the right to a fair trial. The one that perhaps I think probably affects everyone in the UK the most, the right to respect for a private and family life.
Wow, that can be taken. As you said in the beginning of this podcast, it probably means different things to different people.
Yeah.
And the right to have a respect to private family life, I mean, you know, I should imagine does mean different things to different people.
I think so. I mean, and in terms of other human rights, perhaps most prevalent at the moment is the right of assembly and association, which classically is interpreted as the right of freedom to protest. And obviously we've seen that being exercised significantly at the moment.
Yes. Black Lives Matter protests. And it's an interesting time with that, isn't it, really, to be honest, Matthew, because you've got the Coronavirus Act, and the fact that we're not allowed to group together in more than certain amount of people, 6 at the moment, in a bubble where they're from another household. And then you've got the human rights laws, which say, well, actually, people have the right to go out there and protest something they believe in strongly, and they want to get their voices heard. They want to, be able to protest. So the government, I guess, you know, it's tricky times to try and balance that. Where do you find the balance?
It's even more strange when you think about it. We've got this global pandemic, yet we've got people, thousands of people, quite rightly, in my opinion, out protesting on things that matter to them. However, going back a few months, we had the Extinction Rebellion in the streets of London, and the Metropolitan Police went to court and managed to get something to stop them protesting. And then we had a similar case with, I can't remember the exact name of it, but there was a situation up in Birmingham where people were protesting outside a school. And again, there was an antisocial behaviour order, I think it was obtained to stop people doing that. So it's interesting to see that when something perhaps upsets the government, they will do things to try to stop people exercising that right.
Yes, and this is interesting about human rights, because, you know, the law says the law is for everybody. Doesn't matter if you're a minority group. It doesn't matter if you have disabilities. In fact, there's more provision for people with disabilities in the law. That's why there's disability laws. But yet, you know, somehow people, I talk for the UK and maybe for people around the world, don't feel like the laws are protecting them equally, which is why people are going out and saying, look, you know, we're going to protest. We're going to bring to everybody's attention what we believe in. And yet you go back to the core of the law, and there are basic laws, even before we go into the detail of them, like human rights laws, that should be protecting these people. Standard, period, without any question. So Yes, I mean, you were providing us with some examples of human rights laws. Let's continue with that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got others. So we've got the restriction or the protection from discrimination. There's the I suppose the one that the stand-up comedians quote often, freedom of expression, yes. Freedom to say what you want, which I think is probably more important at the moment as well, in line with the right to protest. I mean, in terms of that's all very academic and theoretical. In terms of practical examples, which I guess may make more sense, maybe you go out on a Friday night to the pub and you end up for whatever reason getting into a fight and you're arrested. Well, you know that the basic Article 6 right to a fair trial comes into play, so that if anything happens within the criminal justice process, there are certain safeguards in place for you. Or maybe you're in your 80s and you lose your mental capacity. You know that your right of
having a fair trial.
Deprivation of liberty comes into play if you're old and you lose your mental capacity, because there are certain restrictions on how you can be treated and where you can be homed, etc., against your wishes and things like that. So there are certain means and safeguards in place.
I mean, that, and I know that you said there's 16, and we've mentioned a few of those, of how, you know, examples of how human rights laws affects people in everyday lives. I think it affects us more than we know. For example, yes. The disability point, you know, it that could be so varied and in such a wide aspect, I can't tell you. I mean, you know, I've seen situations of disability discrimination that have been shocking, really shocking, by actually one specific example. I won't name them, but by a large corporate brand where it was so shocking. And then what was even more shocking was the legal help they got was not competent enough to deal with it. They missed a date that they had to respond to the court by, and they lost the case by default. But yes, I think that the good thing is human rights laws exist. They are very, very extensive. And, you know, there will be something to protect vulnerable, to protect minority, to protect the, you know, elderly, the disabled, and various areas of people. And I think there's sectors that we don't sort of automatically think of, because vulnerable and minority groups always spring to my mind quite quickly. They're the ones at the forefront of my mind, and probably and perhaps the forefront of many people's minds, because of the way in the world is operating at the moment. I mean, during this pandemic, and we're in, you know, 2020, and we're in June 2020 today, I've never seen in my lifetime where places of worship have not been closed. Every place of worship, you know, the doors have been locked. You cannot go and practice your religion in a place of worship. I don't think the world has experienced that before.
No, and it's interesting, because actually one of the ones I didn't mention earlier is the freedom of, it's termed the freedom of thought, belief, and religion. And how does that fit in with that, I suppose, is the question. Well, I suppose maybe the human right extends to having your belief. I suppose the actual practice of that belief maybe isn't covered. It's not something that I'm personally expert on, but it is something that's worth thinking about. I mean, the one that I often find quite difficult to reconcile myself is, so certainly in the European Convention, and it does apply in the UK because of the Human Rights Act, is the right to marry and to start a family. And how does that then fit in with the fact that it's only in very, very recent times that gay people have had the right to marry? So
yes,
it's interesting when you start to critically think about
this, isn't it? Because actually, that's a very good point. We're talking about human rights laws being, you know, in place. Okay, as far back as the Magna Carta, we've mentioned the sort of 1300s, etc. But then, how on earth has that not evolved sufficiently enough to allow gay people to be married? Only as so recent as, you know, in last year or two, couple of years. So it does make you wonder, I have to say. I mean, how are human rights protected in the UK, Matthew? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about what the UK does to protect human rights.
Well, in theory, the Human Rights Act 1998 forced the UK effectively to bring in all of the human rights under the European Convention. So that provides the general protection to citizens on the basis that human rights do apply to them. And by virtue of the Human Rights Act, all public authorities have to consider everyone's human rights when they make a decision. Similarly, government has to comply when it's enacting new laws. Otherwise, as you'll be aware, but maybe some of our listeners won't, is that courts can effectively block the law. I mean, they can read down legislation.
And that's a key point. That's a very, very key point for people to understand, I think, across the board when we're thinking about our laws. And here we are in the Human Rights Law podcast mentioning that the court has a separate power to the government.
Mm.
Yes. That is a really key point. So if the government has its laws, that's brilliant and that's great and that's there. But if that law hasn't worked for you, it's breached your rights in some way, that's when a court can step in proceedings and say, right, no, we're going to block that for you as the applicant in this case. Or, and that's really important, I think, for people to know generally. Yeah. Because you take what the government says, the law's the law. We don't ever think, do you know what? Can the law be changed, prevented, stopped in a situation which it can be in breach of your own rights, particularly human rights?
And certainly you would expect, so you're right, there's the separation between the court system and the government. What you would, I suppose, really expect, but what you don't necessarily think about, is local authorities in the UK. So the county councils are often involved in advising people on rights, so things like housing, education, social care. I think most people, quite rightly actually, would expect the local county council to be telling you things correctly. And I mean, by virtue of the fact that I've got a job, if they did, then I would be out of one. They don't.
Wow. Let me just explain what you just said there, because that's quite crucial. What Matthew's saying by saying I would be out of a job if they did is that Matthew has assisted a number of cases where he's assisting people, against council decisions that have been made, against social care sectors and that have been made, and this is why we. In your introduction, you say that you focus on education, health, and social care sectors. And if he didn't have to assist people against the decisions that councils make, local authorities make, then he wouldn't have a busy practice as a barrister and a specialist in this area, which is quite key. I mean,
Hattie, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm getting excited down the centre of the camera.
Get excited, Matthew. Get excited. That's what this podcast is all about.
The one that's even more interesting is that actually it all applies to public authorities. What the Human Rights Act doesn't apply to are individuals and companies. So in theory, when you as an individual or you in your capacity as a director of a company or whatever are making decisions, you do not have the same onus on applying the Human Rights Act. And again, the way that you're people are protected against individuals and companies making or breaching your human rights is, again, it goes back to public authorities, because they then have the power to enforce human rights compliance on individuals and companies. So the most obvious example of that is if you think about child abuse, for instance. So it's dark for a Thursday morning, but
you
think about
very serious and dark
vulnerable child who's being not properly looked after by their parents, while the parent has no, morally yes, but legally they have no obligation to think about necessarily that child's human rights in the way that we would think of public authorities to do so. But then councils are tasked with ensuring their compliance, because if they realise that parents are mistreating their children, they can then issue care proceedings.
Yes.
To try to either protect the child or teach the parents to be better parents, effectively. But then again, the parents' human rights then come into play, because it's one of the few limited circumstances in which, regardless of how wealthy as a parent you might be, you are guaranteed non-means-tested legal aid. So the state will then effectively fund your defence.
Which is something that actually is quite, you know, there's less and less of, because legal aid, as we know, has since 2014 has been reduced to which kind of cases they cover, etc. But no, that, I mean, that's a very, very interesting example. And what I would like to talk about, because we're running out of time, and there's so many things I want to talk about here on my list, but I want to talk about, what are the current issues in human rights laws, do you think, Matthew? Where are the problems?
I mean, thinking about the current time, it is a great time to be talking about it, because you've got, and rather, I suppose, unapologetically going to talk about what's going on in the world now, we've got the coronavirus pandemic. We've got, as you quite rightly pointed out earlier, the state effectively restraining people's freedom of movement, freedom to effectively have a social life, etc., reconciled against their rights to do so. We've got arguably racial inequality over the UK, and how that fits in with the right to discrimination. The reason actually the CAD proceedings was at the forefront of my mind earlier is one of the recent examples I've been reading about. There was quite a big case recently about care proceedings where the mother, it was a very, very serious case, she'd managed to get what the legal profession call a silker, the Queen's Counsel, so a really, really experienced, really senior barrister to represent her. The senior barrister, I don't know exactly the reasons why, but for whatever reason was shielding, so couldn't actually attend court to represent the parents. The mother, as I understand it, asked for the case to be adjourned because she was in effect at court representing herself, and I believe her lawyer was tuned in through Zoom or something. And the court basically allowed the case to go on despite the fact that she was obviously necessarily being represented.
As
effectively as other people there. So, and then the courts found that was absolutely fine on appeal. So, yeah, there are lots of interesting issues caused by the current ongoing pandemic.
That's a very, very interesting example, because I can see both sides of the coin, if I know, speaking plainly. Here you are, the court has allocated a trial date, resources have gone into that, money has gone into that. If you know that your barrister, your representation is not going to be able to make it, I mean, it's very unlikely, or it could happen, but very unlikely that you would find out 15 or 20 minutes before the hearing itself. What you need to do, what your lawyer needs to do, your solicitor, this is, if your solicitor, which is quite often the case, has instructed your barrister for you, is to find you another barrister very, very quickly.
Yeah.
The court would expect that, I think, Matthew, to a degree. So I can understand where the court is coming from. Why hasn't that been done? And now, I mean, obviously I don't know the details of this trial, but the court is not there to discuss that in detail. They're represented by solicitors. Solicitors should have gone out there. There's 17,500 practicing barristers. You can get hold of a silk, a QC, or a very senior barrister, I think, quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And then I can understand the client. You know, how can they've relied on the advice of their solicitor to turn up and just say, look, can we adjourn? Can we ask for an adjournment? And again, I don't know when the adjournment was requested. Was it done the day before? Was it done literally live as they went live on a Zoom call to have a hearing due to the pandemic, and you know, or Zoom, or it would have been another technical database. I don't think the courts use Zoom, but they use something very secure. We've certainly had court hearings in that way, telephone hearing actually. And you know, why should it be allowed to go ahead if she hasn't got the representation that she expected to have? So I can understand both sides of that. But yes, you're absolutely right. You know, the human rights right now with the pandemic do seem to be being breached on one side, but then there's laws coming up faster than we can probably heat up a kettle to make a cup of coffee on the other side, dealing with trying to contain and control groups of people and what's going on with COVID and people's rights to protest and where and how. So it's a very interesting time for this area of law. And I think there are certainly a lot more that we can discuss in a part two.
Absolutely.
We've just literally opened the tin.
Indeed.
We haven't even taken the lid off. So what I will say, Matthew, is thank you ever so much for making the time to join me today.
Absolute pleasure, Hattie. Nice to be here.
And I look forward to our part two, if I may say so myself.
Me too.
What I will say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you.